I love a beautiful lawn. You love a beautiful lawn. Everybody loves a beautiful lawn, but they don't love how long it takes and how difficult it can be. And that is where True Green comes into play because it's the easiest and most affordable way to get that beautiful lawn. Let's be real. You've got plenty of other things to do in your free time than focus on your lawn care. So let True Green take care of all of that hard work while you get to do everything else that you want to do, like go play golf. Here's what you need to do. Visit truegreen.com. Okay. It allows you to do you. Let them do the lawn care. And if you visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, that is all guaranteed. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. It's truegreen.com. Get started now.
Welcome back to the First Cut Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Kyle Porter. I'm Chip Patterson. Kyle, we've got the Canadian Open coming up this weekend. It's Canada's major.
It's a big week for Canada, man.
Big week for the Toronto Raptors, Drake, the Canadian Open. We're going to have, we had a good mailbag submission. Looking at Canada's major. We'll be getting to mailbag coming up later. We're going to go into some Canadian Open history going back 100 years. Crazy stuff that Kyle has for us. But let's start with one thing that we touched on Monday's podcast, which was the U.S. Open sectional qualifiers. I've often seen golf fans, golf writers, and golf media point to some of these sectional qualifiers are like a really, really cool experience. You can go there,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Have you gone?
Yeah. No, I've never gone. I was actually going to go here in Dallas because that's where Shane Bacon was playing his qualifier, his sectional when he made it through local. But it was the Monday after the PGA. I was still in New York at the time. So I didn't make it out. But yeah, it's a fascinating day. I mean, we've seen huge names come through there. We've seen people win the U.S. Open coming through section. I think the last one to do it was Lucas Glover.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a really interesting day because, and Jeff Shackelford pointed this out on his site. He's like, look, this is like half the field gets filled out on this day. What other tournament can you say that about? It's a very unique and honestly kind of a special thing.
So what were our results?
So the names that I sort of parsed through that stood out to me that qualified, I'll just give you, there's like six of them here. Thomas Peters, Matt Parziali, who's we talked about him on Monday, the amateur firefighter from Massachusetts, who was the, I think he was the low am at last year's U.S. Open at Shinnecock. So this is two in a row for him. The other Rory, the boy from Bratislava, as the shotgun start folks like to call him. Colin Morikawa, Cal. Brandon Wu, Stanford. Both those guys are just coming off NCAAs. Stuart Hagestad, three in a row for him. He was the mid-AM that qualified for the Masters, was low-AM at the Masters a few years ago. And then Jason Duffner got through as well.
All right, so, Jason Duffner, there you go.
Yeah, he actually pulled out of the Canadian Open after qualifying. So there you go. Guys who didn't make it that were kind of notable, Lee Westwood, Cam Champ, Ryan Moore. I'm shocked that Ryan Moore is not in. I don't know why. I don't know his stats. It just, that stood out to me. Max Homa's not in and didn't get in. If you win an event within like 2 months of the U.S. Open, you should be in the U.S. Open. I feel like that should just be just go ahead and implement that right now, USGA.
So did Max?
That's absurd.
Where was Max Homa's win? Did it get him into the Masters? Is he in the Masters, but he couldn't get into the U.S. Open?
Yeah, he's in the 2020 Masters.
Oh, he won the Wells. Of course he's getting into the Masters.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's silly.
Yeah, it's absurd. And then our boy, Akshay, didn't get in.
Wait, currently residing in Wake Forest, North Carolina, just outside of Raleigh.
I butchered his profile so bad. But yeah, he didn't make it. I did see that So Steve Stricker played with somebody who went 85-92 at his sectional. Not great. So there's, the whole thing is, it's kind of crazy, honestly, to have a broadcaster in Bacon playing. You've got people shooting 85-92. You've got former major winners getting through. It's a pretty interesting day. There was a great quote. There's an ESPN article just talking about who got through. And Anirban Lahiri, who's from India, qualified. And he said, he was just talking about like how grueling of a day it is. And he said, I didn't keep a yardage book because I didn't want the mental work.
Wow.
And he got through. And you're like, how good are you, first of all, to not keep a yardage book and still make it? I mean, that part was crazy to me. And then Brandon Wu had a great quote in there as well. He said, it's a surreal feeling. It's starting to sink in. Graduation is on Sunday of the U.S. Open. He goes to Stanford. The idea is to make the cut and then maybe wear my cap and down the 18th fairway.
That's awesome.
That's pretty awesome.
Yes.
That's pretty cool. Some fun stories going into Pebble here in a couple, or I guess next week.
Of those names that you mentioned, for the ones that didn't make it, most surprising to me had to be Ryan Moore, if for no other reason than he was the 18-hole leader last weekend.
Yeah. Was it? Oh yeah, he shot
a 65 on Thursday at the Memorial, holds the 18-hole lead, and then doesn't get it done at sectional qualifiers on Monday.
It is pretty interesting because everybody's whining and moaning about something like NCAA match play. Is this the fairest way? And you're like, well, okay, set that aside. Looking at getting in the U.S. Open, who's better at golf, Ryan Moore and Max Homa or Matt Parziali?
Right.
And so, look, fairest isn't always most interesting or best for the sport. And I think that's sort of highlighted in the way that you can qualify to get in the U.S. Open.
All right, it's Tuesday, and one of the things that we love to do here on Tuesday is to see all of the large gaps in Chip's knowledge with some Tuesday trivia.
I know. I don't do this to embarrass you. I do it because it's fun to talk about.
Right.
And I got some fun ones here. So we'll run through them. Who's the all-time, first one up is all-time money leader at the Canadian Open. Now, from our combo last week, this is going to be somebody that's recent, that's still playing, just because Charles Howell's like 17th all time in money in PGA Tour history. Right. So who do you think the all time money leader at the Canadian Open is?
Tiger Woods.
It's a good guess. It's actually Jim Furyk.
There is a Tiger Woods shot from the Canadian Open.
Yeah.
You obviously know exactly what shot I'm talking about, right? Is it like,
yeah, I think it was either 2000 or 01 at Glen Abbey.
And
you're talking about out of the
fairway bunker.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's out of the fairway bunker from, I don't know, what appears to be a mile away, and he hits it snug on the green.
Well, and I think it kind of rolled onto the fringe, and they had him comment on it later, and he said it wasn't even that great of a shot. It didn't even stay on the green. He's like 9 feet from like 270 out of a bunker over water. You're like, that's the sickest shot I've ever seen.
I hit it really well.
Really good.
Really good.
Okay. How many Canadian Opens do you think Mike Weir has played in?
Mike Weir won the,
03.
04 Masters? 03 Masters. So let's say 21.
He's played in 28 Canadian Opens.
Impressive. Love it.
That is stunning to me. 28?
Yeah, but let me throw this back at you. Mike Weir to the Canadian Open, Jordan Spieth to Colonia.
Yeah. 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 Like by the time he's 40, Spieth will have played in 24 Byron Nelsons.
Right.
That's crazy.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a good point. Okay. How many people have won? So the PGA Tour on their side, they call the Canadian Open, U.S. Open, Open Championship, like the Triple Crown of or whatever. And you're like, I don't know if that's actually what it's called, but how many people have won those three in the same year? Do you think
the Open, U.S. Open, Canadian Open?
Canadian Open, yeah.
Will you give me? So I guess we know from the tease on the story, the Canadian Open's been around for at least 100 years.
Yeah. It's last 40 years it's happened. 50,
oh,
last 50.
Okay. I'm going to say it's happened in the same year twice.
That's correct. Lee Trevino did it in 1971 and Tiger Woods did it in 2000.
Nice. Yeah, Tiger was going to be my one bet for recently, just out of the like his opens run, the idea that he would sneak. And is that shot that we were just talking about probably from that win?
I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, so Tiger and Lee Trevino, sure. That's an elite group. So, who's most likely to pull that off this week?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, it feels pretty good. We're going to talk about it later, but Koepka, DJ, Rory, JT, let's see. DJ, Koepka, Rory, JT, Kuchar, Webb, Sergio. And then he goes like Henrik Stenson, Bubba, Snedeker, Scott Piercy.
The boring answer is DJ or Koepka.
Yeah. I don't. Rory's interesting because Port Rush, he's played great at Opens. I don't think he's going to be competitive or be like in the mix at Pebble. So JT, I question him at the Open. Sergio is interesting.
No. I went way too hard on thinking that this was going to be the major that Sergio bounces back.
Yeah, that's right. He has missed like 15 straight cuts. Yeah. I don't want to say DJ or Koepka, but DJ or Koepka.
All right.
Last one. And this is not to embarrass you because I don't think I remember this happening because I was probably sleeping after the Open Championship last year. This tournament always falls after the Open. And for us, the week after the Open is like, oh, there's my bed again. Welcome back to, you know, living the sane life. And so I do not remember this happening, but who won last year's Canadian Open?
Dustin Johnson.
Wow.
RBC.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I seriously probably could not have told you that.
Him playing, I remember, was kind of a furrow your brow and... And then it's like, oh, RBC. Okay.
Yeah, you're like, why is DJ playing the RBC Heritage and the RBC? Oh, okay. Yeah, gotcha. Yeah,
absolutely. Like somebody was somebody asked me on a radio hit yesterday in South Carolina. I've got a Monday hit in on ESPN Radio in Charleston, and at this time of year they just pepper me with golf questions for like 25 minutes. And sure. They were like, so DJ's, he's got to play. I mean, I can't imagine why he's doing this. He has to play. And I was like, I'm sure Dustin Johnson, sponsored by RBC, would tell you he is thrilled to be a part of this event.
It's just great, you know, great prep work for the U.S. Open.
I mean, it's just a great event. It's always good to get out here and, you know, see where my game's at.
That's pretty good. Okay, that's all the trivia I got.
All right, coming up after the break, we'll go into the mailbag, a Canadian Open history lesson, and our picks for the RBC Canadian Open. All that right after this.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
All right, Postman, let's open up the mailbag.
Yeah, let's do it. I'm gonna start with a DM. I got one DM question. I guess this guy doesn't want his name read, so we'll just go with the question. And it's a good one. What are the realistic chances of Phil winning this US Open? And as a follow-up, how many more realistic shots does he have to complete the Grand Slam? So I was reading Phil's transcript from Memorial because that's what I do, is read transcripts. And sometimes it is. Like, yeah, I spent Monday.
You talk about it as though that's like a embarrassing thing, but I promise, like not to go too inside baseball for the listeners, but you're at least getting like unadulterated, unfiltered answers and comments. And having been in rooms like that, you can kind of understand what the back and forth might be like. It is much better to do that than only to rely on the cherry-picked quotes that a columnist puts in his Sunday column or her Sunday column.
Yeah, there's so much content in transcripts. Right. There's so much good stuff in there, especially from like the non-Tiger, non-Phil. I mean, it seriously is really good. And anyway, Phil essentially said, like, look, I've got two more shots. It's not happening after that. Like, it's Pebble or Wingfoot, and that's it. And I just, I don't know, man. I think it would be pretty miraculous if he were to really even contend at either one of those. I know he won Pebble earlier this year, but it's way different. And he is not hitting his driver very straight right now. So I think if he's in contention on Saturday, that's a stunner to me. That's like the story of the tournament so far.
I think the answer is no. I agree with you that it's probably in these next two. And if Phil says so, then yeah, absolutely. But here's what I would sort of point out. If you were to ask me during the playoff hole of the match last Thanksgiving, if either one of these golfers were going to win another major, I would have probably said no. And the fact that we got one already, I feel like we got our daily bread. Like that's our portion. Like that's it. Like the Tiger story is what's going to happen. To have Phil follow that up at the U.S. Open just doesn't. It seems too storybook, even for sports that gives us storybook endings all the time.
You're right. Like can you imagine Tiger, Koepka, Phil consecutively?
Yeah,
it would be Koepka, Tiger, Phil, or Koepka, Tiger, Koepka, Phil in consecutive majors.
Mm.
That'd be unbelievable.
Right,
and you're right. Like, I mean, to complete the slam is one thing, but to do it at Pebble, at the U.S. Open, where he's been awesome at Pebble over the course of his career and in the regular PGA Tour event.
He just won there.
Yeah, I know. And he finished fourth at this event in 2010 at the U.S. Open behind Graham McDowell. He was tied with Tiger. So there's at least a history there. Did you see his comments, by the way, about the USGA?
No.
He said the only restrictor, I think that was already used, that they have, like the that wasn't the word. I can't remember the word he used. It was really it was an interesting word. Governor. The only governor they have is rain. He's like, if it doesn't rain, they just can't help themselves. Which is pretty hilarious. But he basically said, like, of the 29 US Opens that he's played, it's never, like, the only time that the USGA has been bailed out or whatever is when it rains and it slows things down. And I feel like that's a little unfair. I feel like it's funny because Memorial every year kind of serves as like the jumping off point for these players to get ahead of the USGA thing. And you're like, is this just like the annual thing that we're going to do where we just start burying the USGA at Memorial every year?
Yes.
It's really weird and not, I don't know. It's not, I don't love it, but
yeah, but they're getting enough response to keep hitting it. Like I thought to myself the other day, so is UCF really still going to be beating this drum? And the answer is absolutely, because they've gotten enough positive response and notoriety. Yeah. And like it is received enough positive reinforcement that they have not been given any reason to stop. And I think that the same thing with the players in the USGA, particularly in the locker room and in the sort of insular world which the players can live, like it is really easy to start harumphing, and everyone else is like, yes, I also harumph about this. Like, there's just not going to be someone who's like, guys, this is old. This is tired. We need to move on.
Well, I thought what was also interesting, Tiger and Rory talked about how the USGA has sort of gotten away from its identity. And what they mean by that is, like, they want more of, like, the narrow fairways, the long rough, and less of Erin Hills, less of Chambers Bay, less of this sort of wide open thing without rough around the greens. And they both actually compared it. Rory said, we've already got one open championship a year. We don't need two. And Tiger essentially said the same thing. And I thought that was pretty interesting because I don't know. I mean, like, it seems like Erin Hills, like, helps. You could go back and forth on whether that helps longer hitters because it does keep more guys in play. And as we know, like, from a shorter distance, hitting out of the rough is a lot easier than a longer distance because you can cut your wedge, cut your nine iron through there. So maybe that would help the longer hitters if the rough was up and the fairways were narrower, because everybody's going to miss a lot of fairways. But I thought that was interesting that they kind of contrasted it to what an open championship should be.
What else do we have in the mailbag?
Okay, so this is from Will Anderson. He said, Brooks Koepka mentioned on Twitter yesterday that the Canadian Open is Canada's major. Does that mean we should bet the house on Brooks this week?
Yes.
Yeah, it might. That might factor into my picks. I might have to change my picks.
Oh, man, Brooks. I'm so happy we're close to the U.S. Open. I really, in the character development, and again, the theme of the summer 2019 is character development. Brooks is feeling himself, and he is really starting to come into his own. And that's why, I mean, I'm just smiling thinking about it because he's so good that he's going to be a factor. And, you know, we'll see what happens here. He'll probably be like T6 at the end of it. And he's going to go in as the betting favorite to win the U.S. Open at Pebble.
Here's my take. Brooks should only play opens.
Not even. No.
So he should only play majors and opens and the tour championship. Yeah, you know, this is the Netherlands major championship this week. Like, he should just try to win the Scottish
Open the week before the Open Championship, French Open,
Australian, Spain. Spain's a good golf country. And then he could do the, you know, tour championship. This is FedEx's major.
The funny thing is, I bet he has played some of those from coming up on the Challenge Tour.
Oh yeah,
He goes
the Portuguese Open.
Yeah, he goes to Le Golf National and he just burns it down.
the Moroccan Open. Okay.
So bet the house on Brooks, definitely.
Do what?
So yeah, bet the house on Brooks. Absolutely.
For sure. Speaking of Brooks, did you see the thing I put out there yesterday about active PGA Tour, like active PGA Tour players ranked by major win? Did you see this?
I did not. Here, let me pull it up real quick.
It's pretty interesting to look at. So Tiger's obviously got 15. There's nobody from 14 to 6. So nobody has 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. And I defined active by they're playing 10 plus events every year, which somebody said, are we sure Tiger's going to play 10 events this year? Which I thought was hilarious.
Fair. Yeah.
And then you go at 5, you've got Phil. And then at 4, you've got Brooks. You've got Rory. You've got Ernie Els. At 3, you've got Spieth, Patrick Harrington, and Vijay Singh. And at 2, this is incredible, you've got ZJ, you've got Martin Kaymer, and you got Bubba. What are your just looking at this list, this tweet, what are your takeaways? What are your thoughts?
Do you want me to rank them?
No, I'm just saying, like, what stands out to you? Or maybe who's not on it or who is on it or whatever.
I think that if not for Brooks Koepka, our 2-3-4 would be more peppered with some of the names that we consider the best golfers right now. That Brooks Koepka almost individually is probably keeping us from seeing DJ, Justin Thomas, like some of these other really good one major winners who have been strong recently, but look, those are Brooks Koepka's majors.
Yeah, so if Brooks didn't, if he was never born, we can play that game, Tiger would have 16. That's crazy. DJ would have
three or just two? I'm not totally going by like you just finished one stroke behind either, but I agree with you that Tiger would have won the PGA.
Okay, so Aaron Hills, well, either Brian Harman or Hideki would have a major.
Oh, if only.
And then Shinnecock, I think, was Fleetwood, or was it DJ?
He was in the final group with DJ. Fleetwood dropped a 63. But yeah, he was Fleetwood, like a couple groups ahead.
Fleetwood would have a major. So DJ would have two, Fleetwood would have one, and Brian Harman or Hideki would have one, and Tiger would have another.
So yeah, that's my instant thought is that of all these, like Brooks's four versus Rory's four, if Rory, and I would have to go back to look at this, but if Rory doesn't win those four, I just anecdotally would guess that it would be more scattershot winners. If Brooks doesn't win, it feels based on some of the leaderboards that he's beat recently that we would have seen someone who already has won at least be up there on the two line.
Yeah, I think that's a great and I think that's a great point. And I think that and I agree with you. Although who finished second to Rory at Valhalla? Was it it wasn't Ricky. Was it Phil?
Oh, wow. So he would have been up at six.
That's a fun game. That's the if this person hadn't been born game is fun.
I mean, outside of the ultimately morbid starting point.
Oh, yeah, of course. Okay. So let's see here. I kind of want to say this, I did a deep dive on the Canadian Open, like the history of the Canadian Open, and I found just some fascinating tidbits about the 1919 winner. And the reason I found this is because this week's Canadian Open is being played at Hamilton Golf Club and Golf and Country Club.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the 1919 Canadian Open was. But I sort of want to save this for tomorrow.
For Sean.
Would that be okay?
That's okay. Yeah. He'll get
it. Let's do that.
He'll like it.
Let's do that.
Let's get our picks in for the people.
Yeah, let's do. Yeah.
Who you got as your winner?
I got Scott Piercy.
Yo, where'd that come from?
Yeah, he won here in 12, and he's been playing pretty well. I looked up, Datagolf has this really cool, like, so the hard thing about Opens, and specifically, like, the Canadian Open, because if you look at a U.S. Open, you're like, okay, I know what kind of golf is going to be played there. It's sort of the same every year.
Right.
For the most part. An Open Championship, I know what kind of golf is going to be played there. It's more or less the same every year. But a Canadian Open, you're like, okay, well, it's different courses. There's sort of nothing to go off of. Like there is at a regular PGA Tour event where you're like, okay, we're going to TPC Sawgrass. We're going to, you know, Harbortown. Like who has a good history at that course? You're kind of all over the place with these Canadian courses. So I just went back to, you know, last time they played it at Hamilton, and Scott Piercy won, and he's been playing really well. What I was going to say is that Datagolf has a trending table. And so it kind of looks at like who's been like going in the right direction, thus the name.
Mm-hmm.
And Scott Piercy, in terms of players in the field this week, is pretty high up. His last five finishes, T19, T41, T2, T3, T56. And that doesn't include, or maybe it does include the team event. I'll have to look at that. But regardless, like he's playing really good golf. He's won here before. He's kind of his odds are kind of up there. Like he's 25-1, which I thought was interesting. But I like him this week to win again at Canada.
Is Datagolf a Canadian registered website?
Maybe. It might be.
That you've got to go to them. Then they're gonna have their predictive model this week is gonna be better than it's ever gonna be.
What is that? Yeah, they're .ca.
Man, I would
datagolf.ca. You're right. What a pull. Great catch.
All right, so Scott Piercy is your winner. I already said bet the house on Brooks Koepka, but it's not Brooks Koepka who's going to be the winner this week, Kyle. It's the anti-Brooks. You know who the Rory.
Mm. That wouldn't that be perfect? Rory wins this week and Brooks wins Pebble.
Yeah. No. I'm all in on Brooks wins the majors and Rory wins everything but the majors.
Are you picking Brooks for Pebble?
No.
Mm. Do you know who you're picking yet?
No, I might go.
You're going to talk yourself into Spieth, aren't you?
No, probably Xander. Like, I might go Xander or Cantlay.
Oh, I love it.
It's just, you know, there's just so much, again, like, the play. All right, so the mindset of the play is Tiger, Phil, Brooks. Like, there's a lot, right? Like, there's a lot of, like, pressure. Not pressure, but, like, there's just a lot going on. A lot of the oxygen is being taken up. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those are when we catch a little bit of a curveball. And the curveball often is not, like, a totally out-of-nowhere winner. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, at least somebody else who doesn't have that on their plate and is going into the week with a little bit more, you know, they're not answering the same questions. They're a little bit looser. Maybe heads a little bit more clear. I got to go back to, you know, actually look at Pebble with some course history on that. But like, if I was ready to pull the trigger on JT until he ejected on Friday at Memorial.
Yeah, I love that. You're going to talk me into picking Xander.
Yeah.
So Xander at the last. See, I think here's my deal. I think you look at U.S. Open history more than you look at Pebble history, because, and Phil said this after he won Pebble in February. He's like, look, it's not even the same course for the U.S. Open, and so it's almost like, okay, well, do we even look at like what happens at the Pro-Am? I don't know, maybe. But last year, Xander T5 at Erin Hills, T6 at Shinnecock.
Ah. Well, how?
That's tasty.
Whatever the USGA does fits Xander's eye.
Yeah, I like that. Okay, I got DJ top 10 this week. That was an easy one. Although I probably should put Brooks in there. And then my sleeper is Nick Watney.
Hmm.
Yeah, that was an interesting one. He is. Where is he? He's been playing really well. I'm not seeing him on here. He finished T23 last week at Memorial, and then he was top 10 at Colonial. So kind of sneaky under the radar. I think he's like 80-1 to win. So yeah, I like him as my sleeper this week.
Do you remember what Dustin Johnson's winning score was last year?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it was
23. 265. Yeah,
Whenever I was doing the trivia stuff, I looked that I pulled that, found that. But I was like, oh yeah, DJ beat, maybe this is why I don't remember, because he beat like Wee Kim by like 7. You're like, oh well, that wasn't super just memorable.
Dusting everybody. All right. Yeah, so sleeper's Nick Watney, top 10 lock is DJ. Even though we're switching up the golf course, we still think that there's just such a high floor for Dustin Johnson at events like these. Any other sort of Canadian Open storylines specific to the tournament, or players that you're watching, or hunches that you've got about, as you mentioned earlier, a pretty good field?
Do you think they have a sponsor exemption for Drake?
No.
That's probably good.
What
does Drake do? Does he just go to sporting events?
I think that Drake likes being loved, you know?
I think he likes being Drake.
Yeah, Drake loves being Drake. It's like Magic stepped down from running the Lakers so he could just be Magic.
Yeah.
Because being Magic is way more fun than running the Lakers.
For sure.
Drake hasn't... Like, Drake hit a point in his music career where, I guess, like, last summer, and maybe even still, any like new and upcoming artist would reach out to Drake to come get on a song, and that song would ultimately lead to radio play. And so when you're not even being asked to like craft whole albums, you're just having to like come in for a session or send an email in a verse, and that is only expanding your own market, because when you're getting in with new artists, you're reaching younger audiences by doing that. He's just he found the easy button in what his profession is. I would call him an entertainer. I would call him a musician. And when you're smashing that easy button on the professional side, why not enjoy some leisure?
For sure. Courtside, John with Draymond. It's great.
I mean, I do not think... No, but the reason that I wasn't going to line up Drake with the Canadian Open was just because I'm not investing a lot of confidence in the decision makers of the PGA Tour of this, or at least of this event, to be jamming Drake on their iPhones. I'm willing.
I want to see Jim Furyk and Drake in the Wednesday Pro-Am together.
I'm willing to be proven wrong, but it is far more likely that all of them know Drake as who their kids want to listen to, and they get tired of.
That's great.
All right. We will be back tomorrow with Sean Martin, as mentioned, and some more history lessons and some just bigger thoughts as we continue to count down to the U.S. Open. You can follow Kyle on Twitter at Kyle Porter CBS. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Kyle, thank you very much.
Thanks, Chip.